countdown to the last comic shop in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Soaring through the space waves, it is now time for more of the Last Comic Shop Podcast!
That's right, we are opening our metaphysical comic book shop up to newbies to let them find their way underneath this giant comic book cosmos.
Keeping the lights on for the oldies and the metaphysical moldies that want to learn about all the cool comic books that have been coming out in the last 10 years or so.
You're absolutely right, Chad. And
darn right I am.
I wouldn't say anybody's oldie and or moldy, but I will say this, that I am the host of The Most, Andy Larson. I'm joined by Chad Smith and J.A. Scott for another installment in our Merry Marvel March Society Month. That's right. We're doing all Marvel books here on the Last Comic Shop Podcast all through the wonderful month of March to hopefully spring into a new comic book season. And this week's selection comes from our own J.A. Scott. So you know it's either an X-Men book or something involving the Silver Surfer, right, J.A.?
Well, that is correct. It is the Silver Surfer. We will be reading Silver Surfer Black.
Ooh. That 5-issue series from Donny Cates and Trad Moore that came out a couple years ago, which you actually have in an omnibus, don't you, J.A.?
I have it in omnibus. I also have it as a trade paperback and the digital version as well. Marvel got my money on that one.
There you go.
I wanted to make sure that they knew that someone's buying up the Silver Surfer stuff.
But haven't you said on many occasions that that is the one thing that Marvel has not been putting out in recent memory is solid monthly Silver Surfer books?
Yes, we haven't had a monthly Silver Surfer book since the Dan Slott, Mike Allred, Laura Allred Silver Surfer thing that came out.
There have been some minis along the way.
Some minis, yeah. There have been a bunch of mini-series. Ron Lim and Ron Morris had a couple that are sort of very nostalgic. What I like about Silver Surfer Black is it's not the Dan Slott Silver Surfer. It's almost the anti-Dan Slott Silver Surfer, and it's in the modern telling of Marvel, you know, it's in continuity at the beginning of time, if you will.
Yeah. No, I'll stand up for that Slott Silver Surfer, but it is its own thing where they play fast and loose with the characterizations, and it's off in its own separate corner, and as long as you don't think about it too much, it's lots of fun.
As we've often said on this show, as long as you don't care about the characters that Dan Slott is working with, Dan Slott books are just fine. If you care about them, though, ooh, man, he knows how to needle you. I guess I'm asking, before we get started with this week's show, which is going to be talking a little bit about our favorite Marvel characters, I did want to ask, J.A., do you think there's a particular reason why the Silver Surfer isn't a character that gets off in his own monthly book? Like, is there something impenetrable about this character that doesn't seem to lend itself to this?
I think some of it is probably for writers, he's not the easiest to write for because his power is so great. He has a bit of that Miss Marvel problem where he's too powerful. So, you know, how do you build in struggles and antagonists? Though then again, his cast of villains and Rogues Gallery are also all pretty powerful people. I guess it's that he's a bit of a space Jesus, so people are you know, he's too good, he's too wholesome. His inner dialogue is always, he's a tortured soul. How fun can that be to write for? I don't know.
Okay. He's a very shiny straight man.
Right. Yes. It's very true. It's very true. Because, I mean, you mentioned the powerfulness. Thor has had a book for forever, and that's a character that's a god and really super powerful. Yes. Yet he has a book. And Superman. For God's sake.
Superman, I get that. Thor, I was going to say, but Thor drinks, and, you know, he gets debaucherous.
Yeah, he's a rapscallion.
Yes, so we all have to blame Stan Lee for making him Space Jesus from the beginning. If he was, like, a drunkard, maybe Silver Surfer would get more books, I guess. But regardless of whether Silver Surfer has a lot of books or very little books, he is one of J.A.'s favorite characters, as you may know if you're a longtime fan of the Last Comic Shop podcast. But I was curious about who else is on J.A.'s top five Marvel characters of all time list. That's right. Not only J.A.'s, but I'm also curious about Chad's, although I have kind of loose suspicion. And I'm sure there's some folks out there that are curious about mine in terms of Marvel characters. So on this episode of The Last Comic Shop, I thought it was a great time to plant that flag and say this is definitively our top five characters that Marvel has ever come up with. From five to one, you can give a quick sentence about why each one of them is on the list. And since I mentioned J.A. to start, I think we should go with him first. So J.A., starting off with number five, who are your top five Marvel characters?
Okay, so as you said, it's going to be mostly X-Men and Silver Surfer number one. Starting off, number five, Mystique. And that's the comic book Mystique and maybe the first X-Men Mystique played by Rebecca Romijn, but not the Mystique played by Jennifer Lawrence, because Mystique, she's bad. She's supposed to be evil. She's not a superhero. She's not even an anti-hero. Maybe she sometimes does things that are slightly heroic, but it's always because it satisfies what she wants to get accomplished. She's very much in the mold of Magneto, and that's how she should be written, not as a superhero. I'm sorry, Jennifer Lawrence. Next up, Nightcrawler, because who doesn't love a guy with three fingers that can teleport and has a tail with a point on the end of it?
I know a lot of guys with three fingers. They just have two more.
Oh, look at you, too. The mommy and the son, back
to
back.
There we go. Yep. And then we've got Kitty Pryde, now Kate Pryde, Shadowcat, one of the most powerful yet unassuming X-Men.
Okay.
Always found it interesting that she got to be an X-Men, but then all the New Mutants, who are the exact same age as her, had to be New Mutants.
They're X-Babies.
You can only have one audience surrogate at a time.
I guess so.
Was Kitty ever on the same team as Jubilee? No, because they had that's the surrogate. Like, that's the Claremontian surrogate character.
Okay. Well, if you're going to go Kitty Pryde, you need her bestie, and that's Magic.
Ah, number two. That's not surprising.
I'd say number two with the bullet, but it's actually number two with the horns and the hoofed feet. Yet another one with a spiky tail when she wants to.
I will ask, is it just because she's hot as hell? And I mean that literally. Like, she's hot as hell. Like, she comes from... but, no, I'm serious. Like, why... Why Magic? Why Magic so
I don't
so
know.
Hot?
I like... Because she's strong-minded. She's strong-willed. She doesn't wait for someone to tell her what to do. She just does it and then apologizes for it afterwards. Even when she was young, even in the New Mutants. Like, when Cloak and Dagger got taken over and their powers were draining into Sunspot and Wolfsbane, Magic is just like, I'm taking them into limbo and I'm going to cast a spell. And then she almost kills them and she brings them back. And Professor X says, don't ever do that again. She's like, yeah, well, I thought I could fix it.
So long story short, attempted murder always will put somebody on J.A.'s list.
And I like the fact that she's not just one thing. She's not just a mutant. She's got her mutant powers, plus she's a sorcerer. So it's combining two worlds in Marvel, which is something that it's rare to see, where someone can touch different parts of the Marvel universe. She does the magic stuff, and she also does the mutant stuff.
All right. Well, why is Silver Surfer number one?
Well, I've just read his books forever since I started reading comic books. So... And I do like myself some Norrin Rad. His rogues gallery is fun and exciting. I love the cosmic nature of the storylines that he follows. And I'd love the idea, somebody who's like a tortured soul and always willing to, at the end of the day, sacrifice himself for the greater good.
Very cool. All right. Well, it's time for Chad's. 5 through 1. So, Chad, who's on your list, buddy?
Oh, this is tough. Okay, so number five, I'm going to go with Harry Osborn.
Ooh!
Particularly late 80s, early 90s Harry Osborn. I was lucky enough when I first started reading, I had some of his early adventures, and right after his dad passed away, where Harry Osborn was dealing with all kinds of issues and coming into his own, and then to watch him become the Green Goblin, and then become a good version of the Green Goblin, and then become a bad version of the Green Goblin, it was fascinating, because he's always been torn in all those directions. You know, he loves his dad, Peter Parker's his best friend, and, you know, you never knew which way he was going to go. So Harry Osborn was always fun for me. Number four, I can't resist the rhyme. I'll go with Thor. He's just fun. And there are so many great Thor stories out there. I love the Simonson run. I loved the J. Michael Straczynski Thor. It's one of those characters that I never expected to enjoy, but I keep circling back to Thor stories. So there's a banger going on right now from Al Ewing. So Thor is always great, always keeps my attention. So number three, I'm going to go with Daredevil, another character that, ooh, I relate to on a personal level.
Wow, that's low. I mean, I can see some people being probably higher on your list, but yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I grew up with that whole Catholic guilt thing that Daredevil carries around. I just, there's something about him. He's so fallible and so human, but he's always trying his darndest, and I don't know. There's just something about those Daredevil stories that hook me. And they're my favorite kind of stories. I love those street-level stories, and then whenever Daredevil goes off in a crazy direction, unless it's Shadowland, I'm usually along for the ride and enjoy the heck out of them. My number two character, it's Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man. He's just the most relatable, fun, snappy character. We all wish we were Spider-Man. You know, and I like the fact that in my worldview, you have the meek and timid Peter Parker. But then whenever he puts on this mask, all of a sudden part of his persona is this boisterous personality that, like, it's the parts that, all the nerdy kids always wanted to have but never had the confidence to do. And that's how no one ever confuses Puny Parker with Spider-Man. And then my number one character, he's the best character in all of comics. He's the best character in all of cinema. He's just flat out the best character. He is J. Jonah Jameson.
Yes!
So he wants pictures of Spider-Man, and so do I.
I was wondering who we were going to put at number one after you said Spider-Man was number two, because that's what I thought. So to wrap it up on this week's segment, here is my top five Marvel characters of all time. Starting off with number five, which is Machine Man. No surprise for anybody who listens to this show, just because he has a super cool look. And there is actually some really good stories featuring that character.
When you say super cool look, is it the domed Machine Man or is it the toupee Machine Man?
I like the domed. I like the original Jack Kirby design with the big honking eyes and like
looks like a machine.
It was super cool. And again, my favorite person to ever draw Machine Man is Barry Windsor Smith. If you have an opportunity to pick up Machine Man 2020, drawn by Barry Windsor Smith, it is immaculate. Coming in at number four is, you're going to probably give me crap for this, but it is Vision / Scarlet Witch. And the reason why I say slash is because I don't like either of these characters as much when they're separate. But you put Vision and Scarlet Witch in any single book, that's my couple. That's my OTP. Yeah, that's my favorite comic book couple. No. Yes.
They're both.
It makes sense. Character. It makes sense. But you've just taken two slots.
I have not. They're together in the same line. They are slashed. They are conjoined. They are a pair that cannot be separated. Number three is the first villain on the list, and that's Mysterio. Just because of all of the rogues gallery of Spider-Man, he has the coolest look. I think his powers are crap, but he has awesome look. I always thought if you gave him, like, Doctor Strange-type powers, he would be the most ultimate bad guy ever. But unfortunately, the ultimate bad guy spot is taken by number two, which is Doctor Doom, which is probably one of the best characters in comics of all time. He may say it's J. Jonah Jameson. No, Dr. Doom is the most nuanced and complex character out there. And I feel like anytime you get Dr. Doom in a story, as long as you know how to write him well and play into that complexity, man, that's going to be a banger every single time. And of course, number one is Spider-Man, just because he's Spider-Man.
Specifically, Spider-Man with a beard and two kids.
No. I liked Spider-Man when he was a teenager, when I was a teenager. As he grew up, I wanted Spider-Man to grow up with me because he is the ultimate character that you can relate to. You want to be Spider-Man. You want to put on the mask and do the flip whip with your fingers. And I will say this as a caveat, my absolute favorite Spider-Man is Black Suit Spider-Man. That is my absolute fave. Black Suit Spider-Man, that look, that costume, man, that is the most badass Spider-Man.
Is that Black Suit Spider-Man with the regular web-slingers or shooting out of the top of his...
Oh, yeah. It's got to be tops. Like, that's the coolest way to shoot a web, is, like, out of the top of your wrist. Man, you don't even have to flip over. You're just, like, straight out, man. That's straight out.
Okay, Jay, while Andy was going on, who did you forget to add to your list?
Lots of people.
Yeah, I'm thinking Squirrel Girl. I'm thinking Cannonball. Did you know he's nigh invulnerable when he's blasting?
You've brought it up before. But hopefully we'll be able to cover some of these characters that we forgot on a future edition of the Merry Marvel March Society. Maybe next year. Maybe you'll get 6 through 10. Or a modified 1 through 5. Whatever. One thing that's not modified is our repile for this week, which is Silver Surfer Black. And that will be up right after these commercial breaks.
BCWSupplies.com has everything a comic collector could need. Boards, bags, long boxes, and so much else for our ever-so-increasing collections. And you can save 10% on your total order by using promo code LCSPOD at checkout. Not only does this take 10% off BCW Supplies' already low prices, but it supports my favorite podcast, The Last Comic Shop. So get all your collecting gear at bcwsupplies.com and save 10% on your order with promo code LCSPOD at checkout. That's LCSPOD at checkout. Happy hunting!
When six teenagers are caught in a devastating storm, they wake up the next day with unimaginable abilities. Now the same storm that gave them their powers has awoken an ancient evil set on destroying their home and the world at large. And it's up to them to stop it. In a world without heroes, they're here to kick some ass. Read Born a Storm, a new ongoing series for free at Born a Storm Comic on Instagram. Hashtag Born a Storm.
Back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for our Read Pile Review. Yes, where we are Marvel fanatics. We really truly are. If you listen to The Last Comic Shop for the last 3 years, we've shown a little biased towards the House of Ideas. We are Marvelites to the core, to be honest. So this has been a really fun month.
You're not supposed to say the quiet part out loud. They're supposed to be able to infer.
I am proud of my badge. I got my no prize from Stan Lee. I stand on the soapbox. Any case, this week it's J.A.'s pick for the Merry Marvel March Society. And of course, that book is J.A.
Silver Surfer Black.
This book came out in 2019. It was a 5-issue miniseries. The story is shared betwixt Donny Cates and Trad Moore, but Donny Cates contributes the script side of that story, and Trad Moore contributes the art side of that story. And then you add in Clayton Cowles on letter and Dave Stewart extraordinaire on colors. Quite the crew for this 5-issue miniseries.
Yes. Now, J.A., before you get into the 10-cent synopsis, this is actually a part of a larger storyline that Donny Cates was weaving through the cosmic universe at this time, correct?
Yes, we had a lot of different things. You had a cosmic ghostwriter that was Frank Castle, of all people.
Yeah!
And some Guardians of the Galaxy basically are thrown into a black hole, and that's really the kickoff for this Silver Surfer Black series. He had a run on Thanos, which I'm going to talk about later, actually, distilled into Thanos Wins.
Yes.
A great run in the Thanos comic book. He did some stuff on the Inhumans. He was playing with a lot of cosmic toys, but also some non-cosmic characters that are suddenly cosmic, which was quite cool, like the Cable showing up. Old Cable, old man Cable, not kid Cable. And the Silver Surfer, which kicks off at the end of the Guardians of the Galaxy that he had been doing, where they have been thrown into a black hole. And so Silver Surfer, at the beginning of this Silver Surfer Black series, gets them all out of the black hole by sacrificing himself. You know, how Silver Surfer is that? he's then basically thrown back to the beginning of time, where there's this darkness that's run by Null, spelled K-N-U-L-L, which is this giant cosmic creature that is essentially the father and mother, the creator of the symbionts.
Yeah.
Which are these evil, oozy things that take over worlds and are...
Venoms, or tiny venoms.
Yeah, tiny venoms. Okay. That hate the Silver Surfer, and he didn't know why they hated him until now. Now he knows why they hate him, because he's trying to kill them before they began, apparently. Anyways, over these five issues, Silver Surfer is trying to destroy this Null character and get away from this darkness at the beginning of the universe. He's aided by Ego, who just shows up. And has the chance to kill Galactus before Galactus becomes Galactus. It's very much the, if you had a chance to kill baby Hitler, would you do it?
It is. It's one of the most interesting things about this entire series, honestly.
And while he's fighting, he's slowly being taken over by the symbiote, so he's slowly turning black.
Is he being taken over, or is he just losing his light? There's a big overarching theme within this story, I'm going to start off with that with my initial thoughts. Again, at the beginning of the story, you find out that Silver Surfer has a lot of guilt, because why wouldn't you have a lot of guilt if you helped Galactus destroy countless numbers of worlds, right? Even though Silver Surfer, if you read some of the back matter, like, he's taken him to places where he's trying to feed Galactus on places not populated and things, but sometimes it can't be helped, and he has to take the Galactus someplace where he has to nom on sentient beings. So he's got a lot of guilt. And again, that plays into this whole notion that he's trying to shed himself of his darkness and truly step into the light, or be a light to the universe, which he's been trying to make amends ever since he left Galactus's servitude. That plays a lot into this particular five-issue stretch. Basically, parts of his body as he's fighting Null and trying to just survive. Because I don't even think you said that, like, he was trying to kill Null. I don't think that was the case at all. I think he was just trying to survive Null killing him. It really is like a desperate gambit. He doesn't have all his power, but he's slowly losing some of that power, little by little by little, until the last issue, when he basically has to sacrifice whatever he's got left to survive. And it's very...
He doesn't survive.
He doesn't. Does he? Spoiler alert. But does he? Because, like, it's weird. He does come back at the end. I don't know. I think the fifth issue for me was probably the weakest of the entire series. I don't know. I think issue four was such a banger, right? Like, I mean, issue four was where he goes and meets Galactus. And yeah. You have that, like, whole notion of, like, hey, if your dad was a real douche, like, would you kill your dad? Like,
all right, hold on. Time out. Just wanted to let you know that you're completely wrong on issue five. Yes, issue four is great.
Wow.
But what makes issue five so good is it's so poignant. The way it closes the story. I'm going through this never-ending X-Men saga. Hopefully after 5 years they can figure out, well, maybe not, because, you know, they like the money to keep flowing. But this comes to a nice, satisfying conclusion. Donny Cates, he does this really well in the Thanos Wins storyline. He's so good at ending stories. Now, you might not like the ending, but I think it was very poignant, and he's very good at, wow, you feel like it's done. I love that about the book. I disagree with you. I thought issue five was incredibly well done. It's him coming to terms with the fact that there needs to be destruction, and there needs to be death, and there needs to be blackness in the world as well as light. It can't just be all one thing. It's sort of the play on what happened when Silver Surfer got the Infinity Gauntlet, where he tried to make everything great, and you can't have everything great because you need balance. And that's ultimately the end. He gives up himself so that there can be balance in the world, and sends Galactus off to kill a bunch of stuff because that's needed, and even the Watcher comes down and says that's needed. It's like, can't not have that.
Yeah, and that's the Silver Surfer story in a nutshell. That's his story with the Trial of Galactus, where, you know, the Galactus needs to be there. You can't not have the Galactus. And Surfer's always struggling. I remember in the 90s, the time that Thanos, that Infinity Saga was happening, that Silver Surfer 49, where Galactus is like, oh, all right, you're going to mess with me? Well, here you go, buddy. You get to remember. And he lets him remember all of the people that, you know, the Norn Rat had led to the slaughter. And it's just Silver Surfer just covered in the blood, the metaphorical blood. Oh, so intense. But that's your classic Silver Surfer struggle. And it's here only with Null, right? I want to get this out of the way because I read this when it was coming out in 2019. And I remember giving it to some friends and saying, I need you to read this and tell me if it's good. Because I have a thing with Donny Cates as a writer is someone who, in my mind, has the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. Right? Look at Cosmic Ghost Rider. He's like, yeah, no, I'm going to make Frank Castle into Ghost Rider and give him a baby Thanos to ride around. And, you know, his Venom stories are all over the place. And then there's Null, the god of the symbiotes. The little tiny baby Venoms are just running around being all oozy and stuff. It's so dumb. So dumb. But at the same time, anytime I would read a Donny Cates story, I'm like, man, does he take these ideas that should be the dumbest ideas and really turn them into something special? And even some of his more recent runs, like the Thor run, where Thor becomes the Herald of Galactus, and the Hulk run, where Hulk is basically Voltron being piloted by an evil Bruce Banner. Like, those runs all had so much promise before they were, you know, ultimately cut short there. But having some time and distance from this story and coming back and rereading it, I can definitely say this is a good story. It's not just the Tradmore art, which we haven't touched on at all yet.
Right.
The Tradmore art in this is absolutely amazing. And for every format that Jay has this story in, was it single issues, omnibus, you have a trade, and the digital. The one thing you don't have is the Treasury Edition size, which has that beautiful Tradmore art embiggened, just that little bit. Oh, it's so wonderful, and it's so weird, and the colors are so vivid, and the page design is just out there, and he plays with the form so well. This is somebody that makes the most of comics as a visual medium, and you pair him with Donny Cates' stupid ideas, and all does it sing. It sings so well. Going back and reading this, I was actually impressed with how much Cates brings to the story, and I'm like, wait a minute, I really have to give this guy his due. Because it's a cohesive story, you know, it's a beautiful story, it's a metaphorical story, the art is allowed to sing, the character, it works, it is what the character is, it's not a Dan Slott where it's like, oh, this is great if it were about Doctor Who, but it's Silver Surfer. No, this is a Silver Surfer story, and even silly things like, no, the god of the symbiotes in the darkness, and like, even that worked in this book.
I felt like I was holding back on the art, because it is by far the tippy top of the high point of this entire thing, from the line art to the inking to Dave Stewart's colors. It's just a visual cornucopia.
Yeah, it's beautiful, man. Like from the first page to the last.
Well, and that's the thing. It's such a unique style, too. I mean, there is only one other artist, in at least the artist that I've read over the years, that has a style that even comes close to Tradmore style, and that's the old work of Basil Wolverton, who did Space Hawk way back in the Golden Age. Now, he also did some work on Mad, but his use of color and kind of that almost like yellow submarine-esque way that you curve, the way that people's faces look, you give them huge eyes, and then again, the inks and the colors kind of magnify. It's just different. It's trippy. It looks like the side of a 70s van. But yeah, for those folks that are out there that love Tradmore, I mean, go find some Basil Wolverton. I'm serious. Like, you're gonna find connections to his artwork back in the day. There's not a lot of people in that camp, which is why this makes it so special. Now, I want to go back to my thought, though, about why, again, I thought issue 5. I mean, yes, it finishes the story, and it's good. And it continues a trend throughout all the other issues, which I loved,
which was Silver Surfer using his board as other things, like turning his board into a sword,
yeah,
turning his board into a drill when he has to go into Ego the Living Planet. For the first time ever, the board really was treated as if it wasn't not just an extension of Silver Surfer, but it was something malleable. It was something like, hey, you know what? The only reason it's a board is because primarily Silver Surfer likes to surf. Could have been anything. He could have made it into a bike at one point. He could have been the Silver Biker, but he didn't. He was a Silver
Downhill
Surfer.
Downhill skis.
He could be.
Black Racer has that covered though.
But it was neat because in all the other times I've ever read the Silver Surfer, the board is always like kind of a static thing. Sure, sometimes it's given personality. Sure, it sometimes seen to have its own powers, but never have I seen it so fluid. It was like mercury on a table. It was just kind of
made it into stairs so that he could walk down the stairs to talk to Galactus.
Yes. And so despite there being a great segment in issue 5 where he basically has a sword fight with Null, which was pretty awesome, I won't lie, it's just really hard for me to like escape the fact that you have that issue 4. Right? Like, issue 4 for me was like a Silver Surfer fever dream that I've been having for 1,000 years, which is like Silver Surfer finding Galactus way at the beginning of time and being like, hey, buddy, I'm going to kill you because you're going to end up ruining my life and giving me all this guilt and whatever. And he's like, how do you kill darkness with more darkness? You don't. You kill it with light. You kill it with hope and mercy. And you're talking about that Donny Cates writing. That, for me, was the part of this series that sung. His conversation with Galactus, bar none, was one of my favorite moments in comic books, I think, in the last 20 years. Like, that was just great.
Oh, man, I love that fever dream where he wakes up on Zen Law and, you know, all the monsters coming, and who's the monster? But it's a giant Silver Surfer peering down like blackened salmon.
And he's got a great line in that issue too, where he turns over, he sees Shala Baal, and she's like, why, how could you bring a child into this darkness? And he says, well, let's make some light, you know, let's make some hope, let's make a better tomorrow, not focus on today and what we might be going wrong with the world. I just, again, it's a very hopeful series. And even though Silver Surfer dies at the end, which is maybe the reason why I didn't like it. Like, I get it. It kind of sort of had to happen. And it's kind of neat how he comes back.
You're telling me that at the end of issue 5, you didn't get a little lump in your throat when you saw that panel from the Morbius Stan Lee Silver Surfer book. And it has him saying the same quote, if we turn from battle because there is little hope of victory, where then would valor be? And at the bottom, it just says, for Stan.
I understand. And that was, but come on. That scene with Galactus, was that not great? Come on.
It was.
And the page before the thing J.A.'s talking about, where it's a Silver Surfer and he's overtaken with the symbiote, but instead of being all chromey, he's all the colors of the universe blending through. And oh, man. How cool is that? How cool is that?
And this book, even, I think it came out after the Thanos wins, he's the Black Silver Surfer, and he's got Mjolnir. They didn't mention the version where he becomes Doctor Who, though, and I did find that quite interesting. It was almost written in a way, like, whenever he calls his board, he called it differently than he did in the Dan Slott run.
Oh,
he never said, to me, my board. He was like, board, to me.
Board, become a sword. Board, become shorts. Board, do your best.
Oh, Lordy. Any case, we got more Last Comic Shop right after these commercial breaks with our ratings as well as recommendations. So stay tuned for that.
Bonjour. This is Geek the Old Hog, and I've got a nice little YouTube channel where I review the latest comics and occasionally bang on about the old ones. Ah, why should you bother? I hear you cry. Well, I'm a published writer of comics. I had 6 shops back in the day, and I've been a collector for 50 years. Yeah, that's why there's an O and an L in the middle of Geeky and Hog. I'm clever like that. So, if you fancy it, reviewing the new ones weekly, and then looking at artists and stuff, you know, on the side, as the actress said to the bishop, Everyone is welcome. Geeky Owl Hog, all one word, over on YouTube.
There's something in the air. This dark and chilling graphic novel adaptation of the critically acclaimed play Witchland takes place in Richland, Washington, the most toxic place in the Western Hemisphere, near the infamous Hanford nuclear plant, which in the 1940s and 1950s released significant amounts of cancer-causing radioactive materials into the nearby environment. Witchland, the graphic novel, tells the story of a family who moves to this town and the unexplained terror that surrounds them. Is it owed to the nuclear plant, or something more sinister, like maybe that witch who lives across the street? Witchland, the graphic novel, is available now on Amazon. And more information on the entire Witchland saga can be found at witchlandplay.com.
All right, we're back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for our ratings, where we don't have to call our board Toomey. Toomey, my board. Why do you call it Toomey? I'm still staying. There's a great issue of the Dan Slott, Mike Allred run where they do this Mobius strip backwards and forwards. I talked about it. I'll talk about it till the end of time. It's a great issue. You're missing out if you don't read that one. Any case, we read Silver Surfer Black this week, and Jay's got our 1 out of 4 scale for it. So, Jay, what are we rating this awesome book featuring your favorite cosmic chromed out character?
Well, I think boards would be too easy, so we're going to go symbiote babies. Even the Watcher had like some symbiote on his face or something.
It sounds like some sort of strange Saturday morning cartoon. Symbiote babies will make Peter Parker go bad.
What about his? How about Null's creature design with the Spider-Man looking chest?
How dumb is that?
It doesn't look like a spider. It's more like a crustacean. Like, it's like a lobster.
Yeah, I know, but it had the arms the same way as the...
I know.
Jay, you missed the setup.
What am I supposed to say? It's a crusty bustation?
Speaking of lobsters.
But I will say, I loved Null's sword. If that was candy, I would have eaten it. Because it looked delicious. It was like dark chocolate cherry wrapped around it. It looked delicious. I'm just saying. Great stuff by Trad Moore out there. 1 out of 4 symbiote babies. We're going to go to Chad first, because he read it twice at least. Second reading, bring it up a couple notches?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll read it even more. This is delightful. Everything works. Everything sings. Everything matches what a Silver Surfer story should be. It hits all the notes. It's a 4. Mm. 4 Venom babies.
Fair enough. I'll go next. This is definitely a 4 for a Silver Surfer book. Like, this is by far one of the best Silver Surfer books I've ever read. Does that mean it's a 4 for anything else? You know what? To throw J.A. a bone, I'll give it a 4, too. I mean, it is a wonderful series. It has a lot going for it. First and foremost, the fact that it's only 5 issues. I feel like some of the ideas in this particular series could have got old after a while had it been like an ongoing. I mean, I guess you could have stretched some of these things out, but it really does benefit from being kind of condensed. You know what I mean? To J.A.'s point, it has a beginning, a middle, an end, right? It is a complete story for 5 issues. And over that, although they're super wonky, none of the ideas get wonky enough that you're like, oh boy, I'm getting tired of that. And just when you think, Dean, you're like, yeah, I don't really care about Null, then he brings an Ego, and you're like, oh cool, we're going to spend an issue with Ego. Oh cool, now here's Galactus. That's an awesome idea. So it like kind of keeps on building and building and building, leading up to that final issue. So like, the brevity of it, the art. The one thing I would love about Trad Moore is that everything looks so alien. The dimensions are all out of whack from what you would, you know, normally see, you know, anatomically from folks. We get a lot of crotch shots of the Silver Surfer in this thing. Yeah. Oh boy.
Sans crotch though.
It's just like giant legs and underneath, but it works. You know, again, you're dealing with a subject matter that is alien and different and unusual. And so having art that does kind of make you a little bit uncomfortable, that looks familiar but not, is just wonderful. And boy, those colors. Oh my gosh. Just an acid trip of just funky stuff going on with those colors.
Yeah, it's like somebody took a lava lamp and smashed it against the page.
Yeah, it's Funky Town in space.
Go check out Basil Wolverton. If you've never checked out his work, Trad Moore and him are like soulmates, in my opinion. It's a great Silver Surfer. So fours. Fours for J.A. Happy birthday. A couple months early.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's four for me, too, obviously. The story is great. The art is beyond great. The art is next level. You get this book for the art, and then you're really happy to find out that the story lives up to that spectacular art. So often, we've had, you know, questions on our old Twitter. Do you buy a book for the art, or do you buy the book for the writer, or the artist, or both? For this, it's one of those ones where it's perfect. They work so perfectly together. You mentioned, of course, issue 4, the Galactus issue. I love issue 3, where he's going through and talking to Shala Ball and considering bringing a baby into the world. And do you want to bring a baby into this world that's so dark and evil? And is that something? You know, he's just dealing with these great struggles that normal people deal with, too. Not just space Jesus types with chromed out bodies. I even liked him when he had the little Michael Jackson black hand and nothing else going on.
So dumb. So dumb.
And at least in the omnibus and the trade paperback, you get all the alternate covers. And there's some really nice alternate covers. There's an image by Giuseppe Camicoli of Carnage on the surfboard. Alex Garner did this wonderful Norn Rad to Silver Surfer, sort of looks like their phases are melting together. There's even a Ron Lim one. So if you like that Ron Lim Silver Surfer art, I suggest picking up the trade paperback so you can get those alternate covers.
Yeah. So it's a unanimous 4 out of 4 here on The Last Comic Shop. The first one of 2024 in our fourth season. So we'll have to add that to the big long list. That we'll recap at the end of the year. Speaking of the Glass Comic Shop continuing, it's time to continue with recommendations. Yes, this is the part of every single show where we tell you about other comic books you can get in addition to Silver Surfer Black in a variety of different formats, in single issues, in an omnibus format, in trades. You can also get it in that wonderful Treasury edition, which if you have an opportunity to do that, nothing is better than a Treasury. If they put all comics out in Treasuries, I'd be so happy, but then it would just become commonplace and it wouldn't be so special. But those ones that do, ooh, are they good. In any case, we're going to start off with Chad Smith and his recommendation this week.
There you go. So my recommendation is another book that comes out in Treasury form. And I'm going to start off by saying for my recommendation, I picked the wrong thing. See, I got to the end of Silver Surfer Black, and I had two choices. I was like, do I go and read the King in Black story from Donny Cates and Company, where the Silver Surfer, the blackened salmon Silver Surfer, comes back and helps to face down Null? Or do I follow the Trad Moore route and pick up Doctor Strange Fall Sunrise? And so, because I love the art so much, I went Trad Moore's Fall Sunrise. And remember when I talked about how I wasn't sure if Donny Cates was a good writer or not? Reading Fall Sunrise without Donny Cates made me realize how important Donny Cates was to that whole Silver Surfer Black recipe. Trad Moore and Heather Moore do the storytelling in this one, in the Fall Sunrise, and it takes the trippiness of Silver Surfer Black to the extreme. It's very poetic. It's very metaphorical. And for a long time, it sounds like I've been talking smack on this. It's because the story, I'm still not sure about the story. But man, is the art in here so, so beautiful. So next level. You know, Trad Moore has that indie styling, but a storytelling ability. It's just, it is poetry on the page. And in this story where he gets a hold of the writing duties as well, that poetry, sometimes it's a little tougher to decipher, but you don't mind because everything looks so great coming out. So I'm going to have to go back and finish King in Black. But I still don't think the Fall Sunrise is a bad choice. If you get a chance to get more Trad Moore art, go for it. And like I said, they did release it in a Treasury edition, so that's there too. It's definitely worth your time to continue on, but don't expect it to make as much sense as Silver Surfer Black there.
Well, there you go. So for my recommendation this week, I'm going to recommend something from the other side of the big two. We've talked a lot about Marvel this month. Here comes a DC book, and it's similar to the Silver Surfer in the fact that it deals with kind of the cosmic side of the DC universe, and that is DC Mech. It was a six-issue miniseries that was released a couple years back, and it really tells a story about what if you, like, merged all of the common parts of, like, the DC mythology, like the Justice League and how they battle Darkseid on Apocalypse and how Darkseid is trying to look for the anti-life and trying to take over Earth, and he's got Caliban and Granny Goodness and all of those new gods, bad guys, helping him. And at the end of the day, Superman's the guy that goes toe-to-toe with Darkseid. Just take all of those cool ideas and then just merge it with Robotech. Yes, that's right. In which Superman really doesn't have powers, per se, but he has an awesome set of mech armor. That's right. In fact, everybody does. It turns out that way back at the end of World War II, Darkseid sends his first parademon, which is enormous, like kaiju-sized parademon, to Earth, and starts rampaging across the city. And at that point, the JSA, the Justice Society of America, is like, hold on, we have to prepare for an onslaught of these parademons. So they basically dump all of their technology and all of the Earth's resources in building mechs. Everybody has mechs. Even farmers have mechs. But the Justice League have the best mechs. Batman and Wonder Woman and Green Lantern and Flash, they all have mechs. And then Superman lands, and he's the last son of Krypton, who also has mechs. And they all go out with spaceships led by Lex Luthor, and they fight Darkseid, who eventually turns into a planet-sized mech and tries to eat the Earth. It's kind of neat. And if you have young kids that love the manga, love the anime, love the idea of giant robots fighting kaijus, you take that idea and you just marry it with characters that they already know, like Superman and Batman and the Flash and Wonder Woman. And I think it hits it out of the park. So Speak Up DC Mech, it was written by Kenny Porter with art by Baudelaire Rivas, J.A.
All right, I am going to stay on the Donny Cates run. We mentioned it earlier a couple of times. I'm going to recommend Thanos Wins by Donny Cates with art by Jeff Shaw and colors by Antonio Favella. Basically, future King Thanos is having trouble defeating the Silver Surfer because he has Thor's hammer, and they're fighting a never-ending, never-winning war. So Thanos sends Cosmic Ghost Rider, who is also a Herald of Galactus now.
So dumb.
But and also Frank Castle.
That's so dumb.
Him back in time with a fragment of the Time Stone to get current-day Thanos and bring him in the future to help King Thanos defeat the Silver Surfer, which he does. Then the Thanoses are like, you have to help me, you have to help me. And it's like, a king never begs. And so Thanos goes back, and then, oh, it's so, the ending is so poignant. I'm not going to ruin it for anyone. But you get all these great ideas. Galactus turning Frank Castle Ghost Rider into a Herald of Galactus. You get Silver Surfer in his black with the hammer of Thor trying to smite everyone. You have Thanos powering up the Time Stone with Silver Surfer's corpse after he's been killed. Oh, it's just, there's so many weird ideas going on in this. It's available in trade. You can also pick it up as part of the Marvel Cosmic Universe by Donny Cates Omnibus that also has Silver Surfer Black in it.
I agree that it's an awesome series to, as long as you like Thanos, because he's like, he's super uber powerful in this, right? To the point where it's just like, oh man, like, isn't anybody gonna beat this guy? He's like a big bully. But there's a great scene where he blows Galactus' head. He's just, Galactus is running at him with a giant gun. I don't know why Galactus would have that big of a gun, but whatever. He's running across this planet, and like, just Thanos is just laying there and just blasts his head clean off. It's so brutal, but so magnificent at the same time. Kudos for that recommendation. Love it, love it, love it.
Before we jump out of this area, I do want to just send positive wishes out there for Donny Cates on a human front. I don't know if you guys know some of the real life story of what's been going on with that guy, but he has been through the ringer. And as much as his stories, I like to tease about, you know, oh, he takes these dumb ideas and makes them fun. He has, you know, experienced a soap opera of a life in the last couple of years, including but not limiting to having a case of amnesia that's wiped out large chunks of his memory. And so you just hope the guy gets back on his feet and is able to bring these dumb ideas back to life again in the awesome way that he does. So I don't know. For as much smack as I've talked on Donny Cates, I wish him nothing but the best and hope to see a full return from him.
Absolutely. Yeah, he brings all that bombast from the 90s. Really, he does. It's sincerely the same thing as Rob Liefeld and all those characters in terms of the art. He just did it with the writing, which is awesome because you need that. You need that on both sides of the equation. You need bombast once in a while. It makes for good comics.
Yeah, there aren't enough writers out there that have those wacky ideas that they can bring to life and tell a good story with it from the start to the end.
Yeah. Any case, one thing that we're hoping that you stick around for from the start to the end is all the episodes of The Last Comic Shop, because we get like this awesome part at the beginning where we talk about all kinds of different things, and you get a read pile in the middle, and then you get recommendations, and then you get us talking about where you can find our podcast, which is www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. You can rate, review, and subscribe, and we hope that you do, not only on any of those podcasting platforms, but also YouTube, as we wrap up the Mary Marvel March Society next week. And it's a double feature, because not only is it going to be a part of the Mary Marvel March Society, but it's also a precursor to Movie Mayhem, which we've got coming up in a couple months, when we cover not only a comic book series, but also a movie to wrap up the month. That's right. We're going to have the movie being one of the few Marvel movies we've never covered on this show, Venom number 2. That's right. We're going to see if Venom 2 is just as good and crazy as Venom 1 was. But stick around not only for that, but a real slice of wonderful 90s. You thought symbiotes were great? Oh man, you haven't lived till you've heard our review of Spider-Man Maximum Carnage. That's right. I've been waiting 6 years to do Maximum Carnage on this show. All 14 issues of that tremendous crossover. And I think it's one of the few Spider-Man-led world events that ever happened in Marvel.
So. Oh, I just threw up.
So make sure that you're sticking around next week for all of that here at The Last Comic Shop. Chad?
Talk about strangling baby Hitler. Go back to Maximum Carnage. Oh.
It might be better the second time through it. You never know.
No thanks.
He's just trying to justify all those. How many copies of each issue did you buy originally?
I at least had 2 or 3 of issue 1.
Was it a 14-parter or 18-parter?
I think it was
just too many damn parters.
It's a lot of parts. I think it was 14, but I could be wrong.
Oh, man. All right. So we might be The Last Comic Shop podcast for now. But we don't want to be The Last Comic Shop. So we always encourage everybody to get out there and support your local shops. Go out there and find things like Silver Surfer Black from Donny Cates. Find things like the Doctor Strange False Sunrise by Tradmore. Find things like DC Mech from those guys Andy talked about, Voldemort.
The one that will not be named. his art's great in this.
And then J.A.'s pick was Thanos Wins, which was the tail end of the Thanos series, also written by Donny Cates with Jeff Shaw on art. All those things are great, and there's tons more at your local comic shop, so check them out. And then circle back to the website, www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com, where you could perhaps find some cool merch to wear to said comic shop. What do we got this week, J.A.?
We got t-shirts that go from silver to black turning on the light. You know, you see it one way, it's like black. It's kind of silvery the other way. Maybe we got also the like in a 90s throwback, one of those t-shirts that depended on the heat, changes color.
What were those called? The
color guard, color shape, color swirl? I don't know.
No, their name was more 90s. It was Turbo something. Turbo color? Hyper color.
There you go. All I know is you remember those t-shirts you could get in the old 90s Marvel issues? Like you get like the Ghost Rider shirt or whatever. I always wanted one of those Venom ones with like the awesome, just they eventually came out with them later. Like you could just get them at Spencer's or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But back in the day,
you could all be all of Ghost Rider shirts. I think Chad has one, is the Ghost Rider glow in the dark.
There you go. You can't go wrong with the glow in the dark Ghost Rider.
That is true. You can't go wrong with more of The Last Comic Shop. Until next week, I was the host with the most, Danny Larson. I was joined by Chad Smith and J.A. Scott, and we hope that you stay safe, stay silvery. I think that's a word, silvery? Why not? And remember that we're going to be reading Maximum Carnage next week. That's all I got to say. It wasn't that bad. You had Kerrigan. You had Shriek. You had Demo Goblin, the doppelganger.
It was that bad. Worse.
Deathlok's in that. Remember Deathlok and how stupid he looked?
The Last Comic Shop podcast was a 2024 Black Angus production.